Morning all.
Morning.
How are we doing? You all right?
Yes, thanks.
Jolly good. As Thomas just said, my name's Tim. If you don't know me this morning, I'm one of the leaders here in Midhurst as part of the team that runs this site. And if you are visiting here this morning, it's really nice to see you. Do please feel very welcome. As Thomas just said, we are going to be preaching from the Bible. That is something that we just love to do as a church. As he also said, we're going to be in Romans chapter 12. We're going to be looking particularly at verses 1 to 2. So please do grab your phones, etc., etc., and get that ready to go so we can follow along with what's going on. All right. Cool. Let's just have a quick read, a quick chat, and then we'll go back to it in a bit more detail. So Romans chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So, what does that mean? I mean, when it says, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. I mean, if what is Paul really saying here that we should live our lives, what we do, how we speak, how we interact with people, the attitudes we have, our relationships, absolutely everything we do, we need to do that in a holy way that pleases God. It would suggest that's the case, wouldn't it? And is it me? Or does that seem like a pretty tall order at times? Yeah, a couple of nods, maybe an occasional smile. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have my good days and bad days. If I'm really honest, I have my good years and my bad years. If I'm really, really honest, I've had a couple of really bad years at doing that. Do you know what I mean? We've all had our moments, and I can think back some time in my life where I've not entirely been proud of myself. I'll give an example. You know, you have those days where you're just completely stressed out. And there's just stuff going on all the time. And it was one of those days, I'm driving along, I've got my little boy in the car with me, I'm really busy, and I'm feeling really important, and I'm just thinking, I have got to get this done, I've got stuff to do, I need to get this done. And my wife, Kate, who's now looking at me quizzically, rings me up and she says, would you mind swinging into Sainsbury's, just grab a couple of things. And I said, yeah, I'm really busy, but yeah, okay, I can do that, I'll do that, okay, I'll do that for you, that's fine. And I said, okay, mate, Nathan, we're gonna go to Sainsbury's, we just you have to behave yourself, and just stick with me, okay, we're gonna be really quick. And he goes, all right, Daddy. I go, great, that's fine. So we drive into Sainsbury's, and Kate says she'll WhatsApp me a couple of things, and I get there, we grab a basket, we walk in the door, my phone goes bing, I dig it out, I look at the WhatsApp, and the first thing I'm thinking is, a couple of things. Because I'm looking at a full-blown weekly shop here. You know, this is, you know, there's a point of definition involved. Does anyone else have this, where your other half says a couple of things, and there's about an item of 50 things? We've got, just for those people, a couple of things, the definition of the word couple means two items. Okay? Can we go from there? All right. So now I'm really stressed. I'm really fed up because I am running around like a nutter. And my little boy's there. And you know what kids are like? You know, this is a 7-year-old in Sainsbury's. He's like, Daddy, can I have a toy? No, you can't have a toy. Can I have a magazine? No, you can't have a magazine. Can I have a slush puppy? No, you can't have a slush puppy. It'll rot your teeth. You know, and he's just constantly doing this. And eventually I relent because I'm busy and I get my magazine. And then he's walking around Sainsbury's with this magazine. Have you ever seen a 7-year-old walking around Sainsbury's with a magazine? How do they do it? Like this. Reading the magazine, bumping into me, bumping into other people. I'm trying to corral him. Come on, it's like herding cats. It's ridiculous. Come on, mate, come on. We've got to get this done. Eventually, I get to the till, and the queues are massive, and I'm really getting stressed out now, and because I hate queuing for things. And the only till that is available is the one I really hate, and that's the self-service checkout. Does anyone else feel that way as well? That patronizing voice. It's horrendous, isn't it? Please wait for assistance. So I'm standing there trying to zap this stuff through this till. My little boy's running around all over the place. I'm saying, just calm down, read your magazine. Beep, 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 beep. And I'm getting there. It's okay. And then I got that one thing that really winds me up is when it says, unexpected item in the bagging area. And I'm being honest. I went nuts. I just had enough. I'm like, it's just in a jar of Nutella. Come on. It's where I'm thinking. It's in the bagging area. What's the problem? And you're looking around for that Sainsbury's person to help you, and there's nobody there. And then I stomp off, and I find that Sainsbury's, you know, the one that's got a headset on, that looks like an air traffic controller. You know, they say, come on, give us a hand. Come on, please, come. Can you just look? It's a jar of Nutella. It's in the bagging area. Please, can we just sort this out? I'm really under time pressure. Come on, I need to get this done. And she says, look, sir, I didn't think, first of all, before I do anything else, your son. I said, don't worry about my son. I'll sort my son out. You sort the bagging area. She goes, well, your son. I said, no. I'll sort my son. You sort the bagging area. Do your barcode thing and get on with it. Your son. No, forget my son. Do the bagging area. She says, your son. I said, what about my son? And she looks at me and she said, he's in the bagging area. He's just sitting there reading his magazine in the bagging area. And it's a true story. And do you know what? There is a reality of this. That was not my finest hour. And in the end, I apologized to the checkout lady for actually being incredibly rude to her. I apologized to my son for being grumpy. And there is a reality that back then, I had a lot of mess going on in my life. I was really quite grumpy a lot of the time. And that's true. And it is true for all of us, actually, to a greater or a lesser degree. You see, the thing is, as a church, we really do believe that people should be able to come into our doors just as you are. We really believe that. We love that. And that means that we want absolutely everyone to feel that they can walk straight into the doors of our meetings, they can get involved. We want people to feel they can belong. We want people to feel that this can be a church that they can call home. Regardless of who they are, what kind of time they're having in life, what they've done, how they dress, or what they believe. And if that, and you know what, that also means that if we are going to be a church that's like that, then we're going to have a lot of messy people coming in. And there's going to be a lot of messy situations. Why? Well, because we know that everybody has got their mess. We've all got our baggage, we've all got our insecurities, we've all got our messed up sense of convictions and belief. We've all got the problems that stalk us through life. Even this morning as we're talking, people, there's this real theme coming through this morning of we've got battles. And it is true of all of us. And so do you know what? If you're here this morning and you're thinking, do you know what? Right now, I've got my battles. My life's a bit of a mess. Can I just encourage you to a certain degree? Do you know what you could do? Do you know what you could do? You could just sneak a little look at the person sitting next to you. If it makes you feel a bit better, you can just look at them and you can think, their life's a mess. Or if you feel a bit self-conscious about doing that, you can look at me. And you can look at me and you can think, his life's a mess. Because there's a bit of mess going on in my life too. So can we agree that we can be a messy bunch of people? We've all got our mess. And at the same time, let's not expect the people who walk into our meetings to have their lives all neatly ordered. Because they're going to have their stuff going on too. And what we want is for people to come just as they are. We want people to be welcome, mess and all. So, as I said earlier, if you're a guest here this morning, I really do hope that you feel welcome. I hope you feel that you can come just as you are, mess and all. So moving on from that, if that's the kind of church we want to be, what are we going to look like? I mean, we're going to be a bit of an interesting place to be. There's going to be a lot of things going on. And to use an analogy for it, as a church we want to be actually kind of a lot more like a maternity ward than a graveyard. Let me explain that a little bit further. Because if you think about it, if you go to a graveyard, everything's very predictable, isn't it? Everyone's all lined up beautifully. No one ever steps out of line. No one ever causes any problems. No one ever complains. There's no admin headaches. There's no mess, no worries. And there's also absolutely no life. Conversely, if you go to a maternity ward, it's absolute chaos. There's people everywhere. Some people are in pain. Some people simply have absolutely no idea what's going on. There's loads of mess. There's loads of noise. There's loads of excitement. And there's also lots and lots of new life. And as a church, that's the kind of church that we want to be. And here's the good news. Yes, we will be a church with lots of mess. But as people come and as they hear the truth about Jesus, despite our mess, despite our shortcomings, there is a God who loves us endlessly, chose to die for us, save us, and accept us. And with that, a radical transformation starts to take place. Because when we operate from a knowledge of God's great love for us, we can be confident that we may come as we are, but actually we will not stay as we are. We worship a God who is in the business of changing lives. And the Bible is really clear on this. It says that we don't change our external behavior and then the mess inside of us kind of gets sorted out. Actually, the biblical order of things is quite different. Firstly, we believe. We believe in Jesus and God's great love for us. And then, as a result, we are changed from the inside out. So over the last 9 weeks, we've been preaching through the book of Romans. And if you've been following it either in here or online, we can see that it's really crammed full of lots of theology and doctrine. There's lots and lots of truth about God. There's lots of truth about the gospel and his grace to us, and Jesus' grace to us. So if you've missed it, I would just like to encourage you, do download it. Do have a listen. It is really good, thoroughly life-changing stuff. And so far, what we've done is we've preached through chapters 1 to 11, but today is actually the last day we're going to spend in Romans this year. We're going to be finishing up our little series for now, and we're going to revisit Romans again next year. So this morning, what we'd like to do is kind of make this a link between what we've looked at so far and what we're going to be looking at again in Romans in 2019. So what we'll do is we'll dig into these verses that we read earlier. We'll do it again. We'll do it a little bit deeper so we can really understand them. And then I'll give a little bit of a brief overview of some of the points of the rest of the book. Are you up for that? Awesome. Brilliant. Let's do it. Great. So let's read Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 again. And let's really dig into this for a few minutes. So, Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Okay, so this morning, I really want to point out I only have one really major point for you. And we can summarize it really in kind of one sentence. If you want to take away one thing from this morning, here's what I want you guys to understand. When we understand that God gladly sacrificed himself for our sake, we will gladly sacrifice ourselves for his sake. I'll say that again. When we understand that God gladly sacrificed himself for our sake, we will gladly sacrifice ourselves for his sake. And in this verse, Paul calls us as Christians to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice, to gladly sacrifice ourselves to God and give up our preferences for his sake and glory. And that is our true and proper worship. That's what it's saying. And what he's talking about is actually something that's really practical. It's how we live our lives, how we interact with God and others. But Paul doesn't start by saying that. What he starts by saying is, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy. That's what he says to start with. So in view of God's mercy, what's he referring to there? Well, what Paul's talking about, he's talking about the gospel. When he says, in view of God's mercy, he's not talking about what we practice. He's not talking about what we do. What he's talking about is what we believe. Our practice, how we live our lives day by day for Jesus, is preceded by a knowledge and appreciation of the truth of the gospel. So here's the point. When we fully grasp the gospel, that God gladly sacrificed himself for our sake, then, and only then, will we live differently and gladly sacrifice ourselves for his sake. Another really important thing in these verses is that little word at the beginning, that word therefore. And actually, that's very key to our understanding of these verses in this section of chapter 12. And there's two points I just want to talk about really quickly with that. The first point is this, that word therefore shows that the gospel must come first in our lives before practice. As we look into the rest of the book of Romans, there is a significant gear change that happens with this word therefore at the beginning of chapter 12. Paul has basically devoted the entirety of the first 11 chapters to describing the gospel. He's been talking about the Christian message. He's been talking about doctrine and theology. But there's been almost nothing at all about how we should live, nothing practical at all whatsoever in those first 11 chapters. In fact, if you look at it, if you go through it and analyze it, in those first 11 chapters, there's only six specific instructions that are given to Christians. And they're all in chapter 6, and it's all talking about how a Christian should relate to sin. But then once we get from chapter 12 onwards, chapters 12 to 16, there's 80 specific instructions that Paul gives to Christians. Okay? So just to summarize that, first 11 chapters, only 6 instructions. Last 5 chapters, 80 instructions. That is a significant gear change throughout this book. So the book of Romans is laid out exactly like that. The first 11 chapters, it's all about the gospel. It's all about truth. What he's trying to say is get it into you, get it, learn it, understand it. And the last section of it is all about how we then live that out. And our lives as Christians, actually, they're laid out in the same way. The gospel always comes first. The good news that God is, what God has done for us needs to be the primary ingredient in our lives. It's the basis of everything we do. It's what we must understand and appreciate before we go into the practical side of things. The gospel always needs to come first. So we could say that we only have Romans chapter 12, 16. We only have that back end of the part of Romans because we've got the gospel in Romans 1 to 11. So what Paul's saying in these verses, because of Romans 1 to 11, in view of God's mercy, therefore we get Romans 12 to 16. Does that make sense? Great, you're there. Fabulous. Thank you. And if you've never heard the gospel before, then can I just give it to you in a nutshell? Because when we talk about the gospel, it's the message that every single one of us has sinned. We've all done things that we know are wrong. We've all messed up. We've all made mistakes. We've all done things that we're not proud of. And in the process of doing that, we've turned away and we've rebelled from God. And God, as a result, would have nothing to do with us. We would be disconnected from him spiritually and we would be simply condemned. But the gospel is about good news. And here is the good news, because God could have left it that way. Because he loved us so much, he was willing to pay any price to bring us back to him. So he sent his son Jesus, and Jesus, being God himself in human form, gladly sacrificed himself and laid down his life to take the punishment that we deserve. And so now, the life and the relationship with God that Jesus deserves is freely made available to us, because God chose to sacrifice himself for our sake. And that is what Paul's talking about when he says the mercy of God, the great mercy of God. And when we understand that mercy, when we grasp the truth that we're free from the consequences of our sin, that we're fully restored, that God looks on us as his children, that God loves us unconditionally, that we can know God for ourselves, both here and in heaven, that's a point where we get a point of transformation. When we understand that mercy, it's astonishing, it's transforming, it's wonderful, and the practice then flows from that. So can I just encourage you, please don't be tempted to skip over chapters 1 to 11. Because that's the bit we need to believe in order to get the practice right. And we are, and let's be honest, we do this, don't we? As people, it's almost like we say, you know, I don't need to know the theory, just tell me what to do. Does that make sense? Yeah, men are bad at this, I'll be honest. Ladies, am I right? Yeah, so I bought a new barbecue this year. Right, I don't need the instructions. I'll just build it. It's fine. How? 2 hours in, yeah, I had to take it to pieces. Start again, get the manual out and understand it. It's just a fact. Okay? Don't be tempted to skip over the Romans 1 to 11. Because it's absolutely key to our understanding of then how we live life. So when you hear the Bible preached, the theology, the truth bit, it really does matter. Let's not become so obsessed with the application. Because if we do that, we will start to live our lives practically, and we might even do the right things, but we'll probably be doing them for the wrong reasons. The gospel always needs to come first in our lives. And the second reason this little word therefore is so important is because what we practice must come second. It comes after the gospel. Because the gospel always changes people's practice. And if it hasn't changed your practice, then the reality of it is you probably haven't fully grasped it or fully believed it. And believing it is fundamental. It's more of an understanding thing. It's about really believing it for yourself. It's more about having it in your head. It's more about having it in your heart. and putting your trust in God and putting your trust in the gospel. So if we believe what is outlined in the first 11 chapters of Romans, all about what God has done for us, then there will be a therefore moment in our lives. It's not a maybe, it's not a possibly, it's a fact. When we grasp the truth of Christian theology, there is always a change in people's lives. And there is no such thing as a biblical theology and gospel that doesn't affect the way we live. So when we preach into theology, when we talk about the theory, if you like, about the gospel, we aren't just preaching to the intellect. It's not a message for our heads so that we can just talk academically or try and show other people how clever we think we are. No, the truth of theology is it must influence our lives in a practical way. And the Bible is actually full of references to this. That's why Jesus said himself, "Know the truth, and the truth will set you free." What he's saying is that when you know the truth of the gospel, you'll be set free not just from sin, but you'll be set free to live a life that's full of love and joy for Jesus. So our passage says, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. This is your true and proper worship. And where it says true and proper worship, that's actually a pretty good translation from the original Greek. Because it catches something of the original meaning of the verses, the original meaning of the Greek. And that Greek word that they use there is logikos. I think we got it up there. There it is, logikos. And that's where we get the English word logical. So you could also translate this sentence as, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. This is your logical or reasonable act of worship. And so you know what? God doesn't want us to just not think. He does want us to use rationale. He does want us to use logic in our daily lives. So what Paul's saying here is that in view of God's mercy, if you offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, this is your logical thing to do. It's obvious, isn't it? And so Paul really is saying here that if the gospel hasn't made you live differently in some way, then you probably really haven't responded to it, or you haven't fully believed it. And that maybe could sound like a negative thing, but actually it's a really positive thing, because at the end of the day, there's an amazing truth within this. Because what that means is that when we grasp the love and grace of the gospel, it's that that changes us. It's that love and grace that changes us. It's not a list of instructions that will do that. No set of commands is going to actually achieve this. And let me illustrate that for you. Let me try and explain that a bit better. Just imagine a scenario. You've got a young couple. Very young couple. They've just started dating. It's going really well. They've had a couple of dates. And they've got, you know, they're at that point in their relationship which they've got what I would call permanent attachment syndrome. Have you seen that? So they're holding hands constantly. They can't bear to let each other go. And if they do, even for the briefest, even for 5 minutes, they're like meerkats all of a sudden. Where are they gone? Where's she gone? And they grab hold of each other. So it's going really, really well. And they're looking at their third date. It's looking very promising. But deep down, this young man, what he's thinking is this really for me? What about the future? Will my girlfriend be the kind of person that I want to stay with maybe forever? So how is he going to find the answer to that out? How's he going to know? So let me give you two options. Let me give you two things he might decide to do. The first one is this. They go on the third date. He organises it. He pushes their boat out a little bit. They go somewhere nice. Candle on the table. Pizza Express. It's easy. You get the general idea. He's very warm, he's very kind, he's very loving. He looks across her. At the end of, you know, they clear the plates away, they're waiting for pudding. He looks across at the candlelight at her. He says, "Darling, I've got something I would like to present to you." And she goes, "Oh, already? This is a bit sudden." He says, "Yes, there's something I really would like you to know." And he goes down under the table and he pulls out an A4 ring binder. And he says, "Darling, I'd like it if you take this home. I'd love it if you spend some time studying it, understanding it, and digesting it. Because this is my code of conduct for the kind of woman that I'm looking to be in a relationship with." Anyone tried it? What do you think is going to happen? What do you reckon? He's probably going to get the A4 ring binder back, isn't he? Probably at speed. Okay? All right? So there's option one. Have a think about option one. Option number two. Here's what he does differently. Third date, it's all going really well, but instead of Pizza Express, he invites her around to his house for dinner. He takes the afternoon off work, gives him plenty of time, he vacuums the whole place, makes it look really, really nice. He cooks a lovely, lovely dinner. And what he does, he doesn't talk to her about what he wants. He doesn't give her a list of instructions or commands, but what he does do, he does demonstrate love to her. And he is selfless, and he is gracious, and he is kind. So which of those two options do you think she's going to respond to best? Hands up for option one. One.
And she did.
Did it hurt, that ring binder? It's a silly analogy, but let's look at it in a slightly kind of odd logical way, right? Because if you think about it, in some ways, option one makes sense. Because if you're that guy and you give her a code of conduct, then actually she's going to know exactly what she should do in every given situation because you provided the answer. But in reality, option two is going to be way more beneficial. Because is she going to, if you give her a list of instructions, is she going to gladly sacrifice her life for that relationship? But actually, if he demonstrates love, kindness, grace, and selflessness, how's she going to react? He's going to get the same back. And the same is true for us. The way to change our lives and become more Christ-like is not to read a list of instructions. It's not to conform to a code of conduct. The way to change and become more Christ-like is for us to better grasp the gospel and all that God has done for us. It's to immerse ourselves in the love of God. And so that's why in this church, when we preach, we don't give you guys a list of instructions. Have you ever noticed that? When we preach, we don't try and tell you what to do in every given situation. This is what you need to do to be a good Christian. But as a church, when we preach, we always preach the truth of the gospel. The gospel must come first, before our practice. And when we get the gospel right, our practice and how we relate to God and other people will change. Way more than if we just preached, practiced, and told everyone how to do things. So just to say again, come with all your mess. Come and hear about the amazing gospel of Jesus. And if you listen, and if you respond, and you believe, then you will be changed. Because in reality, we believe that you come as you are, but we'll not stay as we are. Amen? Cool. So hopefully, you get the importance of this little word therefore. It shows us that the gospel must come before practice, but also that practice must follow the gospel. And then the passage goes on, and Paul says, do not conform to the pattern of this world. In other words, don't be the same as everyone else, those who haven't grasped the gospel. And then he says, but do be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Because of what we know, because what we've grasped in the gospel, we then are transformed. We're changed. We live differently. We're not saved because we live differently, but we do live differently because we are saved. But it's not to say that this happens automatically. When you believe the gospel, you do have to do something. We will be transformed, but it's a proactive process. We're transformed by the renewing of our minds. It's an instruction that Paul gives to us. It's not something he says, that's going to happen. It's something that we choose to do. And that's why I've titled this message, Why I Live Differently. Because it's something that we choose to do. When we get the gospel that God gladly sacrificed himself for our sake, we live differently. What do we do differently, though? How do we go about doing that? And as I said, I'm just going to kind of talk about a few things towards the back end of the book of Romans. We are going to go back next year and do this again, but I just really felt I want to do three quick things I want to have a look at as we do that. Let's see if I can get the PowerPoint to work as well. Huzzah. Great, let's have a look at these three quick things, and it will be quick. First of all, how the church should function as one body. We're going to look at how we should submit to worldly authority, and how we should love our neighbour. So we'll dig into those in a little bit more detail. But the way we do this, and the approach we need to take to this, is going to be the same for all of them. Because we live differently, and we do all these things, but we have to do it in view of God's mercy, in view of the gospel, in view of Romans chapter 1 to 11. So we don't have to approach this like, oh, I'm a Christian, I really should pay my taxes, because that's the Christian thing to do. That's not doing it in view of God's mercy. That's doing it in duty, or maybe fear of consequences if we don't do it. Whereas our hearts should be saying, do you know what, God has been very good to me. God loves me, I love the gospel, therefore I will gladly live differently for his sake. We won't be motivated to live differently by a bunch of rules or instructions or by authority, even if it's in our best interest, but we are motivated by God's mercy. So let's look through the first one, the church as a body. So firstly, in the rest of chapter 12, Paul talks about how the church should function as one body. He says in verses 4 to 5, just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, through many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. So the church is one body. And just as a body has lots of different parts and different roles to play, so the church is made up of many different people who have different strengths, and they can contribute many different things. So what's the application for us here? Really quick. It's that we're all different. We've all got different skills. We've all got different talents. And we all have a part to play. And maybe you're here this morning and you're thinking, well, I feel like I'm just a bit of an appendix. I'm just a bit that's kind of tacked on the side. Maybe you're coming along. Maybe you generally like the church. You're thinking, yeah, this place is okay. But you don't really know, what's my point in being here? Why am I here? What do I do? Where's my place? I have no purpose. Well, can I just encourage you that actually nobody needs to be a spare part? And I mean this in two really quick ways. Firstly, there's plenty of things that you can practically do to actually get involved. If you're sitting here this morning and you're thinking, well, I've got time, I've got capacity, and I've got a desire to get involved with Grace Church, there's loads of ways you can get involved. And God's doing amazing things here. As a church, you know, as Thomas said earlier, we just bought a building. We're running four sites, and we are growing. This church is growing. And it's a fantastic thing. But you know what? We're also really stretched. There's lots of going on, and we need people, basically. If you want to serve, come and serve, because we need people in virtually every team we've got. We need people to do PA, we need AV, we need welcome team, we need kids work, we need worship group. We need absolutely everything. And that's just the regular stuff. There's loads more that goes on besides, behind the scenes, etc., etc., etc. We've got CAP Christian, Christians Against Poverty. We've got a prison ministry. We've got loads and loads and loads of things going on that you can get involved with. And so if you want to get involved, then come and talk to us. Come and talk to Thomas. Come and grab me. Come and grab one of the site team. Because trust me, we will get you involved. We'll get you involved. And if you're thinking, I don't know how, we'll train you up. We'll get you involved. Don't worry about it. We'll get you involved. But also, in a more organic way, getting involved is much more than just having your name on a rota or a team. And I mean that in the sense of just being yourself. Give yourself, give your character to love others. Put yourself into the church. This is God's community. This is God's people. I understand that, you know, some people haven't got a lot of time and capacity to be on a rota, and that's okay. But we can all be some kind of a presence within this church. Don't hold back your character and gifting from the church. Play your part. Chat to people. Engage in worship. Make friends. Serve each other. Love each other. Bless each other. And as I've already talked about loads this morning, let's do all of this in view of God's mercy. Let's love others and serve each other, living lives that are holy and pleasing to God. Because when we get involved with that mindset, that is real worship. So moving on, second point is this thing that we need to submit to godly authorities. Now, let's have a read of this. It's chapter 13, verses 1 to 7. Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Has anyone seen the news this week? Nuts, isn't it? So, right. Paul's saying here that the government has been put in place by God. Even ours. I haven't mentioned Brexit. Oh, I did just then. but right now there seems to be nothing but turmoil and confusion. And we're sitting here going, really? Does this apply to us? But actually, if you read history, it's actually easier for us to believe that that's true in our situation right now than it would have been for the Romans who read Paul's letter in Rome at that time. So how can we apply this to us? How does this work for us? Well, I think in our context, right now, we can be a voice of hope. When we think about, when we talk about our political situation and how seemingly bonkers it is right now, we need to know that our government and all the turmoil that is going on inside it is actually fully under the authority of God. This passage is not saying that we should not have an opinion. It's not saying that the government is put in place by God and so we should just keep our heads down, submit, and just take whatever is thrown our way. It's not about what we believe politically. It's not about which party you support. It's not about whether you're a Leaver or a Remainer. But what it is all about, it's about how we approach the conversation. It's about the attitude that we take towards the government. It is saying that we need to respect the authority over us, to respect the government. We can pray for them. And when we do engage in the conversation debate, we come from a viewpoint of faith. Because right now, as the rest of our country is running around going, oh, we're doomed, we should be the ones that can sit there and go, actually, do you know what? In the midst of all of this turmoil, God is in control. Because that's the truth. And the last one, just really quickly, when I touch on is this idea that we should love our neighbour. In Romans chapter 13, verse 9, it says, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other command there may be, or commands there may be, are summed up by this one command, love your neighbour as yourself. So where's the application of that for us? Well, it's fairly simple, really. Actually, love is a choice. It's a decision that we make. Hollywood likes to romanticise it. And the way Hollywood presents it, it makes it more like a feeling than a choice. And that's why love is not always easy. When we're real about it, when we're honest about it, love comes to a place where it's a choice. If anyone here has been married for quite some time, they'll know that's true. I've been married 16 years, and we can be honest, can't we, and say that sometimes love has been a choice. And I'll be honest and say that I've not always been the easiest person to love. Thank you. We've all had our tough times, but we are very thankful to God that through all of that, we choose to love. And I'm very thankful for my wife, because I choose to love her. She chooses to love me. And through that, there is a lot of love. And that's a good thing. And I'm rambling. Okay. It's not just about how you get on with your spouse. We are called to love our neighbours. And again, let's be honest, the people around us, they can, you know, sometimes they can be really difficult. They can be really unpleasant. They can be really annoying. In fact, statistically speaking, 20% of you lot are finding me really annoying right now. So how do we love others? Because Jesus loved us first. We love others in view of God's mercy to us. When we get that God sacrificed himself for our sake, we will gladly sacrifice ourselves for his sake and for the sake of our neighbours. And you may be struggling with someone right now. It may literally be your next door neighbour or someone else in your life. Maybe your brother or sister, someone you work with. You might be in a place where loving them seems like a completely alien concept to you. You might find it very hard to be warm to them or speak kindly of them. But remember the therefore. Remember the therefore. Remember that the gospel comes first. Only after that is practice going to come. And if we really dig into the gospel and remind ourselves of how God himself has given everything for us, despite the fact that we deserve nothing, then we will live differently. Our practice will change, and it will be infinitely easier to love our neighbours as ourselves. And we won't be doing it just because the Bible says we should. And for all of this, and for all of us, if we're going to have a culture of come as you are, then the reality is there's going to be people coming through the doors of Grace Church who, on the surface of it, will be difficult to love. It'll be difficult to accept. If we truly want people to come just as they are, then some people will come and they're not going to be very nice. And they won't be difficult to choose to love. So, based on that, maybe the idea of a nicely smooth graveyard scene in our church appeals. And the idea of a maternity ward is not very appealing at all. Everything a bit more chaotic and messy. But actually, we are called to lay aside our lives for the sake of God and others. And the reality of it is, it's not our church. It's God's church. So we've all got our mess. We've all sinned. We've all got things wrong at some point. None of us are any better than anyone else. And we are just blessed to know that God loves us and he's got grace for us. And it's that grace and the gospel that makes us love our neighbours, even at our own cost. So just kind of in conclusion, in summary really, just to reiterate, we only have the practical stuff from Romans 12 onwards because we've got the gospel fully laid out in Romans 1 to 11. And the reason why we've preached through Romans these last few months is so not so that we can be a bit clever, not that we can gain some head knowledge. We haven't preached the gospel just because we want to talk to people who are thinking about Christianity or new Christians. We've been preaching the gospel because when we grasp the truth, when we believe in our hearts, whether you've been a Christian for 30 minutes or 30 years, there's a lot of power in the gospel. As Paul said in chapter 1, I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. So just as we come to close, really, and can I ask the worship team to come up again, please? Would that be all right? I'd just like to ask where you're at this morning, because we've talked a lot about this whole idea that actually everything we do in life is based upon what we believe. As Christians, that's the fundamental thing. If we believe, we know the truth of Romans chapter 1 to 11, if we get that into us, that's when our lives change.